Case number 08-7113, Dean Nicole Young et al. Appellants versus William F. Burton, Esquire et al. Mr. Grenier for the appellants, Mr. Maloney for appellee Lewis and Tompkins, P.C., and Ms. Willihan for appellee William F. Burton.
Good morning. Peter Grenier on behalf of the appellants, plaintiffs in the underlying case, Dean Nicole Young and Vanessa G. Your Honors, I've reserved no time for rebuttal. May it please the Court, I'd like to focus, given my limited time, on the portion of our appeal that deals with the improper grant of summary judgment on all of plaintiffs' claims below. As I will discuss, the trial court failed to view the evidence in a light most favorable to the plaintiffs, the non-moving parties. The trial court failed to grant the plaintiffs below all reasonable evidentiary inferences, even including the testimony or sworn testimony and report of defendant's own expert testimony, Dr. S. Michael Phillips. In the original complaint below, plaintiffs did not limit their claim of exposure to mold, yet in the two opinions issued by the trial court, the trial court focuses solely on mold. Now, the pertinent facts are evidence from which to conclude that a jury could reasonably have found...
What was that claim then?
I'm sorry?
What claim was that?
With respect to the exposure...
You said you didn't focus exclusively on mold.
The trial court, in its memorandum opinion of July 22nd of 2008, granting the Daubert motion, focused solely on the issue of mold exposure and did not contemplate or include exposure to raw sewage or any other causal connection to the deleterious health effects upon the plaintiffs. Yet in the underlying case from which the legal malpractice claim arose, certainly there was a plethora of allegations in the unsuccessfully attempted to be filed complaint in the Superior Court filed by the appellees.
Well, was there any evidence submitted by you on those non-mold issues?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor, there was. There was quite a lot of...
In the summary judgment proceedings?
Summary judgment proceedings? Yeah. Well, Your Honor, we submitted it in connection, and it's in the record, in connection with the Daubert opposition, and certainly in the opposition to the motion for summary judgment below, we discussed the Dr. Phillips report, which again does talk about his conclusion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty that there was a albeit perhaps minor, transient 34-day in length irritation.
Possible. He said possible.
Well, actually, Your Honor, in his report at the conclusion, and I'll read his quote, "I conclude with reasonable medical certainty that there is evidence to support a short-term irritant response during the 34 days of habitation and voluntary unauthorized exposure to mold." Dr. Phillips actually also states in his report...
Wait, finish the sentence. Yeah. Aside from a minor, transient, possible irritant, there is no evidence to substantiate.
Your Honor, with all due respect, I'm reading the quote. I believe Your Honor is referring to other portions of his report, but I am reading a quote from his report.
I was too.
Yes, certainly. Right. There are several things that he says, but that's the only statement on this issue that states with reasonable medical certainty. And I take Dr. Phillips at his word for purposes of this appeal and for purposes of relying, as we mentioned in our September 2007 2682 disclosures, that we might be relying upon the reports of the defense experts.
Where so. In the appendix is that material that you just read?
Uh, It is at, it's appendix 204 to 222, and the particular quote that I read is at appendix 221 under the word causation. Now, certainly, looking at the last phrase, the voluntary unauthorized exposure to mold, Dr. Phillips certainly is not competent to give an opinion as far as whether it was unauthorized or not, and certainly that would go to the issue perhaps of assumption of the risk or contributory negligence. But we're here before this court today for a de novo review as to whether there existed enough evidence from which to conclude that a jury could reasonably find in favor of the appellants.
He submits his report, and then he has an affidavit as well.
Yes, Your Honor.
And he sort of backtracks, doesn't he?
Well, he does, Your Honor, but at the time that we filed our September 2007 26A2 disclosures, we made no mention, nor obviously could we contemplate that there might ultimately be a backtracking or a partial reversal, if you will, of his position of an unknown defense expert at that time. But again, to the extent that
the affidavit was not before the district court when she granted summary judgment?
No, Your Honor. What I'm saying is at the time that we filed our Rule 26A2 disclosures, it was not.
So I want to make sure I understand your position. Suppose we conclude there was no abuse of discretion in the Daubert order, excluding the testimony of the doctor. Okay?
Yes.
Just assume we find no abuse of discretion there.
Okay.
What other evidence is there in the record that you rely on?
Yes, Your Honor.
Specifically, what is it?
Specifically, yes. There is the September 13th, 2002 housing notice violation based upon raw sewage. Which is contained in the appendix.
Well, all that does is show that there was sewage there. It doesn't show anything about what it caused in terms of your client's alleged diseases, right?
Well, Your Honor, actually, and immediately following that in the appendix, at 106 to 107, there was a letter dated September 27, 2002, from the Air Quality Division of the Bureau of Environmental Quality to the management of 3064, right. Talking about complaints by residents of the exposure.
How does that show that it caused any problems for your two clients?
Well, certainly, Your Honor, we have the testimony of our own clients. We have temporal onset. We have medical records. And as we all know, statements for purposes of obtaining medical treatment are admissible as non-hearsay. And we've submitted the George Washington University medical records to that effect. There was a temporal onset of the symptoms. And I would also respectfully suggest.
And do you argue this in your brief here? In your appellate brief here, do you argue that, and maybe I just missed it, but do you argue that even without the Shoemaker testimony, is that his name?
Shoemaker, yeah.
Even without the Shoemaker testimony, there's evidence in the record from which is sufficient to deny summary judgment?
Well, Your Honor, we've certainly submitted it as part of the record.
I'm asking whether you've argued it in your brief here.
Well, what we argued in our brief was reliance upon Dr. Phillips' report.
So that's it. So if we find no abuse of discretion, then your case rests on that sentence you quoted from Phillips, right?
Well,
nothing else.
Certainly, in part, Your Honor. Yes.
Well, what's the other part?
Well, the other part is everything that was presented to the court below.
No, I'm asking you about your argument in this court, not in the district court. In this court. In your brief, in this court.
Yes, Your Honor. We actually, on page 9 of our brief, we did discuss also the housing code violation.
What about, and where in the brief did you argue that the plaintiff's own testimony and medical records are sufficient to defeat summary judgment?
Uh, Your Honor, I don't know that we specifically mentioned that.
That's why I asked the question.
I understand. I understand, but it certainly was part of the record.
But you understand why I'm asking the question, though.
Yes, I do. I do. And Your Honor, I see that I'm almost out of time, but...
let me ask you about page 9.
Yes.
I mean, it's a general statement of law, right? And you point us to Dr. Phillips' testimony.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's it, right?
Actually, starting at the bottom of page 9 and then continuing on to page 10, we have the discussion of the housing code violation.
Right. Citing Appendix 104 to Book 5.
Yes. Your Honors, I see that my time is up. Thank you.
I just want to be clear here exactly what you raised.
I'm sorry?
I just want to be clear what it is that you have called our attention expressly to.
Yes, Your Honor.
Other than the Daubert.
Yes. This is the, I'm addressing the September 8th, 2008, 16 line with almost literally no explanation, grant of summary judgment on all of plaintiff's claims by the trial court.
Yes, no, I understand. All right.
Thank you.
Counsel
Paul Maloney.
Lewis and Tompkins?
Yes, Your Honor. Paul Maloney on behalf of Lewis and Tompkins, P.C. And, Your Honors, I represented Lewis and Tompkins, P.C. in the court below before Judge Havel. Two issues on appeal here. First is the Daubert issue. We respectfully suggest that Judge Havel got it right in the trial court. Judge Shoemaker did not have a basis for his diagnosis, and his methodology was not appropriate for reasons that were stated at length by Judge Havel in her opinion. With respect to Dr. Phillips, I suggest to the court that this was an attempt by a plaintiff below, appellant here, to rescue a case that was properly disposed of by Judge Havel. And I would point to the record in the case as follows. The appendix at pages 204 to 222 is Dr. Phillips' initial report that he submitted. It was his 26B4 designation. There was then an affidavit found at supplemental appendix 453 to 465. That was the affidavit that was prepared for the initial Daubert motion that was filed. Judge Havel then asked that the issues be synthesized prior to the hearing that took place. There was then a supplemental affidavit that was submitted at 466 to 476, and then there was a final affidavit in connection with the summary judgment motion, and that was found at supplemental appendix 641 to 646. In addition to that, there was testimony that Dr. Phillips provided at the Daubert hearing. He was present in court throughout the time that Dr. Shoemaker testified, and then he had a very brief period of time at the close of the hearing to give his testimony. And Your Honors are correct. I think that the only place where Dr. Phillips says anything that could be construed to favor plaintiff is on appendix page 221. And Judge Tatel, you correctly picked up the fact that there is more to that paragraph than that which was read into the record. The next sentence after that which was read states that there is no relationship between the medical problems experienced by Denicole Young and Vanessa G and putative exposure to molds or other biotoxins. It follows the exact sentence that was read. And then the last sentence in that same paragraph picks up and the clause begins, aside from a minor transient possible irritant reaction, there is no evidence to substantiate their assertion of harm due to putative exposure. I would also point out to the court at appendix 213 of that same report dated 12/29 of 07, Dr. Phillips, in great detail, goes through and states, in relevant part, in the case of Denicole Young and Vanessa G., molds and sewage exposure may have caused transient irritation. However, these irritants cause no objectively documented illness. Skip a sentence, and then he picks up. There is no evidence to suggest a causal relationship between the problems experienced by Denicole Young and Vanessa G. and their putative environmental exposures. Dr. Phillips then went on and in great detail went through the various criteria used by Bradford Hill on discussing causation of environmental problems and went through a critical analysis of that which was presented by Dr. Shoemaker. All of this points to the fact that Dr. Phillips absolutely does not believe there was any causal relationship between any exposure and any injuries suffered by plaintiffs. And to the extent that that one sentence is pulled out of context, I would ask this court to look at all the references that I have pointed out in this oral argument. And certainly the last affidavit distills his thinking. It was in response to the summary judgment motion, and I believe it was in response to the opposition to the motion for summary judgment. It was the last affidavit, last word on this point, and for plaintiff and appellant here to say that he would rely upon the testimony of Dr. Phillips to make a case below is simply, I think it's inaccurate. I don't think that there's sufficient evidence to get to the jury on this point. Summary judgment was properly granted. And I will defer the rest of my time to Ms. Wheelahan unless there are any questions that the court has.
Thank you. Now, appellee for William F. Burton.
May it please the court, Your Honors. Deborah Merle Wheelahan for Defendant William F. Burton. I do agree with Mr. Maloney that Judge Huvel did get it right. She did an excellent job going through the analysis under Rule 702 and properly excluded Dr. Shoemaker. I might point out that although Mr. Grenier argues this housing notice violation, if Your Honors look at the housing notice violation at Appendix 104-105, it's a violation that says that there's a sewage backup. It doesn't say anything about how long it existed. It doesn't have any real evidentiary value, and there was nothing done with that by the plaintiffs in the underlying case. If you look at the letter that then follows in the appendix, that's a 9/27/2002 letter to a woman who lived in an entirely different building. She lived at 3040 Stanton Road and not the building that the plaintiffs lived in. So there was no evidence at all for the court to give any reasonable inferences to the plaintiffs in this particular case. I mean, the complaint itself...
Reasonable inferences regarding causation.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, what?
Reasonable inferences regarding causation.
Reasonable inference. There was no evidence for even a reasonable inference on causation because the complaint said at paragraph 9 that the plaintiffs were exposed to toxic mold and or raw sewage, and then there was no medical testimony to connect up any claim. The plaintiffs themselves got medical treatment for cold respiratory problems on September 6, 2002. But if you look at the medical records for those areas of treatment, Ms. G had the same problem 3 months earlier, and Ms. Young had suffered from respiratory problems for many years.
And their argument is, if you live in an apartment where there's raw sewage and mold.
Well, there was no evidence that that was in their apartment or that there...
In a building where there is raw sewage, they are exposed to it.
The raw sewage, apparently, from what evidence there was, albeit perhaps inadmissible, from hyperbole from the plaintiffs, was that there was raw sewage outside of the building, near their building, but not in their building. So the only source for their illnesses, and there was no evidence of any connection of the air sources, was the apartment that the plaintiffs went into through the window to take videotape pictures and pictures of. So in their...
Do you understand the configuration of the building? That apartment 1A, was it under 2A?
Your Honor, I don't.
Is there anything in the record you're familiar with that would enlighten the court on that?
There was no effort by the plaintiffs essentially to provide any evidence of other people who had made mold claims, other people who had gotten sick. So there's no evidence in the record.
We I'm wondering if they're living over this apartment. That's what I'm getting.
We don't know. No one ever contacted the landlord. The landlord's representatives were not deposed. None of the tenants were ever deposed. I mean, there's just basically an absence of evidence.
Okay. Anything further?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Inasmuch as appellant has reserved no time, we will take the case under advisement.
Stand, please. This honorable court is now adjourned.